Streaming live around the world, this is Paper Cuts with Brad and Jay.
I'm the one you love. I'm Jay. Thanks so much for stopping by. Over there's Brad. It's his show.
It's his show. That's why I'm the host, and we just love Jay.
Like, I don't know if I'm just dumbfounded, amazed, shocked, or what. God, you just suck the life out of me. It just feels like
you've got a lot grayer since we started this.
I have.
It's a book release party with Robert P. Otone and all of his friends. We are live.
The P stands for purchase my damn book already. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Paper Cuts on a Tuesday. What the hell are we doing on a Tuesday? Must be a book launch, because normally we do this on a Tuesday, right? What better way to spend an hour than with your friends here, Brad and I? We're already famous and popular, so enough about us. We're here to talk about a book release. Let me point the right way here.
You make sure you point the right way. Hold on. Yeah. I can never do it.
This dude over here, he's no stranger to the show. He's been here like 9 or 10 times already. Robert P. Otone purchased my freaking book. And the book we're talking about is The Vile Thing We Created. And Rob, you brought your own posse, your gang, your entourage, your support group.
Yeah, support group.
Let's go around the room. Who'd you bring along and how'd you bribe them?
We have here William Sterling, who is the host of the wonderful podcast Killer Mediums. And
he's a spy too, by the way.
He's a spy. He was just so sweet and so kind in supporting the book. And he read the book early and loved it. And it was just very sweet to hear. And he's also a fabulous author. And so I thought it would be really, really cool to have William here because, you know, he's read it and he really devoured it and had a lot of really wonderful, brilliant things to say, you know, when we did the show. So thought it'd be really cool to have William here. So thank you, William, for being here.
Thank you for inviting me. I sold the soul of my firstborn child to you for this appearance. So I appreciate you bringing me on. But no, seriously, I had you on for that episode. And like every time I have a guest on for an episode, as soon as the episode ends, I'm like, oh shit, there were like 20 different things I wanted to ask them that I never got around to. So this is perfect. I've got them all like lock, stock, and barrel here.
He's got them all.
We talked a lot about peanut M&Ms and like ridiculous things that were not related to the book at all, but it was like fabulous. I love that. That was so much fun.
Yeah.
So William is here and he's got a cool wine glass that has Sadako from The Ring. I really would like that at some point.
He doesn't like come after me here.
That's so cool looking. I would 100% use that. We also have the fabulous, incredible Evie Knight, who was kind enough to give me a ton of pointers on the book. And I love Evie. We got to hang out in Brooklyn for her book release party. Nice. And we went to the tiniest dumpling place on the planet. And it was delicious. And we drank those pouches of booze.
Yes.
Those lychee cocktails.
And ate moving fish flakes.
Oh my God. Remember that?
That?
I forgot about them.
How could you? That was the craziest thing I've ever seen or eaten in my life.
It was delicious. It smelled weird, but it was delicious. But Evie is a Bram Stoker Award winning author, The Fourth Whore, and also is nominated for a Stoker Award this year for 3 Days in the Pink Tower, which is an incredible, incredible, incredible work. So I could not be more thankful that Evie is here. She was kind enough to blurb the book, which is like insane. And it's actually on the back cover.
Yay.
Let me see. We have like three of my favorite people on the back cover. We have Evie Knight, Linda Addison, and Lee Murray on the back cover.
Whoa. Girl power.
Yeah. The queens. The queens all came out for the back cover.
Awesome.
But thank you for being here, Evie. Mm-hmm. I had to have a sip. Pinkies up. And then last but not least, who I think at least 50% of or 60% of the love for the book so far is for the cover. And I owe that all to Alexis Macaluso, who came in and save the day after we had some not so great covers that I actually, my publisher is here, Tony. He was like, I have not been happy with anything. And I was like, okay. And then he showed me one and he was like, what do you think of this? And I was like, bleh. And I was like, I have someone. Hang on.
I want to look at the rejects, by the way. I totally want to look at them.
Tony saved me. He rejected a bunch without showing me. He showed me one that I was like, it's not bad, but it's not right for this. And so then we brought in Alexis and she knocked it out of the park with just everybody is going crazy for this. Oh, and there's a blurb from somebody cool at the top there.
Some pickle hater.
Some very, yeah, anti-pickle extremist. But yes. And there's Tony. I am the owner of Hydra Publications. I am eternally thankful to Tony for taking a risk and publishing this book. But yeah, Alexis really knocked it out of the park. And Alexis is also an author. She wrote Deeply Personal, which we published through Spooky House Press. Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for the book. Kind words.
So what was the whole concept and idea behind that cover? I get a kick out of when I see pictures with like people's eyes scratched out or their face scratched out. Because to me, it always reminds me of like that psychotic ex-girlfriend that cuts the the boyfriend out of the pictures as they break up. That's the feeling I get when I see pictures like that. So where were you coming from with that cover?
Well, Robert had some concepts that were kind of similar with like the couple with maybe the faces kind of scratched out or blurred out. And so that was kind of his concept, but I really like to have the kind of more pastel color scheme, partly just because it's a contrast with the typical kind of red and black horror cover, no offense to those. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the classic horror color scheme. So something in a different sort of look, it kind of, to me, I like that contrast of the more feminine kind of color scheme with something that's like a disturbing subject matter. And it also just stands out a little bit on the shelf. So, you know, hopefully people's eyes are going to go to it just by virtue of it being a high contrast with everything else.
Did you and I talk about how much I love pastel colors or no?
No, but you know that's kind of my thing.
Yeah.
With my book, I love like the pastel colors and the feminine kind of color scheme.
Robert, don't you usually have like a pastel shirt or something?
I usually do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I literally just bought 3 black t-shirts for like the first time ever. And my wife only wears black and she's like, welcome to the dark side.
Right.
She's watching now, probably. I don't know.
Where's your teal?
I love teal. Color. It's a beautiful color.
I do like the cover because it's like this, there's like this innocence to it with this. It's like this family portrait for springtime. And then there's this sinister, you know, scratch other faces, like something's going on there. So yeah, it's really cool.
I'll hold it up while you guys talk about the cover.
So is that a stock photo that you had there, Alexis, or did you completely, you know, draw it or whatever yourself? Or
oh, we've got our sources.
that's their neighbors. Actually, they took a picture of their neighbors and just scratched out the faces.
And I don't know if you can tell on the screen very well, but there's like the girl is holding like this kind of shadowy mass in her arms.
Yeah,
the sinisterness of it. I like
that. That may be representative of the child himself.
For the audio only version of this show, you don't know what you're missing, so you know need to go pick it up. Okay, go ahead, pick it up, then you know what we're talking about. So
the publisher is happy, so that's good.
Yes.
So Alexis, was that your first like run through the cover, or did you go through multiple ones as well, or first time was the good one?
No, we had a few different concepts, and that's the one that we kind of both landed on, but
I liked all of the concepts. Remember, like I really liked all of the ones you brought. And I just thought that one was like, yeah, this is the one for sure. Oh, it's my wife. Oh, she's cool. And she's super pretty.
The letter A is gorgeous, isn't it?
She's she's a big fan of Alexis's as well. So
how did you get hooked up with Hydra Publications? How'd that come about?
And how'd you blackmail them to come tonight and check this out?
I know.
So my mentor, can confirm. My mentor, Michael Nost from the HWA, published the Writer's Workshop of Horror Volume 2 with Hydra. And that won the Stoker, I believe, last year. And Michael also won Mentor. I think he won Mentor of the Year last year as well. And so we were just kind of, you know, in conversation. He and I had been working a little bit on this book. And we were working on some short fiction and stuff in a mentor capacity or whatever. And he just kind of called me, or actually he texted me. I was teaching. I was literally teaching. And he texted me. He's like, "Hey, give me a call when you can." And I was like, "Oh God." I was like, "Is everything all right?" Like, because he and I have like a wonderful relationship. Very like it's mentor and mentee, but beyond that at this point, like he's just wonderful. Man, there's so many cool people here. Good God. I called him during my break. It was towards the end of the day. And he was like, "Listen, I think we can make this happen with Hydra, who just published Writer's Workshop of Horror Volume 2. And I was like, "Oh, that's cool. Like, I would love to be with them. Like, I love that book. I think their books look awesome." So he connected me to Tony. And Tony and I just kind of went back and forth. And then I met Tony in person down at Imaginarium in, where was Imaginarium? Oh, Kentucky. Duh. Louisville.
Because I didn't go.
Yeah, because Brad didn't go, even though he was in Kentucky. I got to meet Tony face to face. Michael and I hung out I think that was the second time we hung out, because the first time we hung out was on the set of Return of the Mothman, the movie based on his book, where I got to be an extra, which was like really cool. We were drinking at the bar in a scene. That was really cool. I'm probably cut out of it. I'll still buy it. I told Rob I would heckle him. Damn it, Kiesling. we just hit it off, and like from there just kind of rolled on. And the editing process was amazing. Callie Rowland was the editor on the book. She's incredible. And it just kind of went from there. And Tony's been a dream to work with. And we set a date. I was like, "How about April?" Because that's when like spring and rebirth and everybody's child is being born and all of this wonderful nonsense. And I was like, "This would be perfect for that time of year." And thankfully Tony agreed. And it's really been just wonderful. Like, I could not ask for a better partner with this book than Tony Acri and Hydra. Like, it's been awesome. We have the cover we want, we have everything. It's really been fabulous. So
how long has this been written before it landed with Hydra?
It was probably done for about, I would say, almost a year before it landed with Hydra, because I was working on it in a Michael bribed him with bourbon. There you go. That's true.
It's bourbon for you.
How is it, by the way, Brad? Is it fabulous?
It's amazing. It's one of my favorites.
I need it. It was probably about a year, because I had worked on it in a summer workshop, which is really great. I got to work on it with some of my friends who are in my MFA program, and also with a certain horror author whose blurb is on the cover. He taught the workshop, so that was cool. That's where we met. And it was great. And I didn't know if it would ever find a home, so I'm happy that it did with Hydra. I'm glad that they're taking a chance with it. Makes me really happy. It's not an easy sell, I don't think. It's, you know, parenting is scary, and you know, that's a big part of it. And Tony got that, and he was like, "I'm all in."
There's a lot of it. What is it, like over 400 pages, right?
It's the longest thing.
Was that intimidating for you to have it that long? Were you afraid there's going to be too many things to cut out, or were you sure that what just went with what you had there, or what?
No, I cut out something that was in the book initially, something that I hadn't really, it just didn't feel right. It wasn't something that I was really particularly interested in exploring. And thankfully, my wife was like my first reader for it. And she agreed. She was like, yeah, this is, I don't think you need something like that because the tension's already there. You don't need to add something like that. So I took that out. That was really the only thing that didn't make it. The original ending of the book was also a little bit different. And the opening was different before Mr. Tremblay got a hold of it. The opening was different.
Evie Knight, when he sent this to you to have you to read it, did you look at it and think, oh, geez, 400 pages? Why can't you send me like, why can't you send me like an 80-page novella? Because I have a long list of people I need to blur for.
No. I was, okay, here's the honest truth. When I first started, I was like, oh, no, here's a guy writing about parenting and childbirth, you know? And I'm always like a little trepidatious because as a female, I'm like, oh, no. And I started reading, I'm like, well, this is good. And really it was just a matter of a few little like medical things in some of it, like in the childbirth portion. But yeah, then I just got hooked in and I just zipped through it. Like in fact, until just before this, I said, hey, send me, you know, the new edit, because I had read like one of the original like drafts. So I said, send it to me so I can, you know, reread before this. And when I opened it, I was like, whoa, I had like no idea it was that long, because I really truly zipped through it. It was just constant something going on, and it was so good. You're like, what is happening here? So yeah, I was super impressed right from the start, because like I said, I'm always trepidatious when I get a male's, you know, take on childbirth and that whole process. And but it was so good, and I was like, yeah, this guy, he's gonna be big.
So how much, I want to ask, how much feedback did you give him for that? Because I know I've seen Rob talk about in other interviews, because you're an OBGYN,
yep,
you're professional. So did he?
Probably more than he needed, because, you know, I'm like, oh.
Too much, EV. I didn't need to know.
And so, yeah, I remember writing a lot of stuff and mostly just about that. But like, he had it really well. I mean, he had it good. So it was just about like, here's exactly how, you know, this scene would roll in real life, I think. I really don't remember, but I know I gave him a lot, but I think it was because I liked it so much.
And what you guys don't know is he writes medical journals on the side under a different name.
I would believe it.
All in disguise. This is just
really impressive. I mean, I just remember being like, wow, who is this guy?
And, so had you read anything of his before, or is this your first?
No, that was my first. That was my first. You know, but it made me read more. You know, it made me like, who is this guy? Where has he been all my life?
So, Rob, why did you want to reach out specifically to Evie? Is it because you knew she was an OBGYN and you wanted that, you know, real perspective from it, or?
Oh, 100%. Like, I was a fan of Evie's to begin with. We actually had a mutual friend in common before we started talking. Mm-hmm. And actually a couple mutual friends. But it was Lee Murray who said, you should reach out to Evie Knight. And I was like, oh, word. Okay. Like, don't intimidate me more by talking to a Stoker winner. That's cool. And then I did. And like, Evie was like literally like the sweetest, warmest person on the planet, which is like, it's weird. Like, I should adjust my thinking. Like, that's what to expect in the horror community.
Maybe I feel like almost everyone is just completely, you know, just great.
Yeah. And that's been the experience. Right. So then like a lot of this, like, you know, it came from, oh my God. Okay. Yes. Like, of course I want everything that Evie can possibly give me. Cause like, I'm not a parent. Like my wife and I are child free. I don't know all of these things, like in the room with the wife who's having difficulties and stuff. Like, I just don't know how that would be. So Evie gave me a lot of that, which was like, this is amazing. And I put as much of it as humanly possible into the book. it was invaluable.
And then how did William get his mitts on this bad boy?
William, didn't you, like, we talked about, because I mentioned, I was like, hey, I'd like to do your show if you could.
Yeah.
I think, right? And then I was like, can I send you the e-arc?
Yep.
Yeah. And he was like, so William said something really funny while we were reading it, or while he was reading it, rather. He was like, this is triggering me. And I was like, oh, I'm going to use that in interviews like crazy.
And so what triggered you about it, William?
I offered to have him on my show, and he was gracious enough to send me the arc to, like,
you can plug your show, go ahead.
Yeah, plug your show, plug it.
And Killer Mediums. Woo,
there you go.
talking about how different tropes manifest across different mediums of entertainment. But
it's a great show. Everybody should listen.
Yeah, thanks. But I got him to send me the arc, not really knowing much about it other than the title, The Vile Thing We Created. And like, that kind of gives you like the gist of where we're going here. And I was already a little bit nervous about it. Like, oh my gosh, I've got two young kids. I've intentionally been trying to distance myself from like child trauma books and stories and stuff like that for a little while, just like because of that. And then I open it up, and like every single thing that was going on in my life, Robert was just like throwing darts and hitting every single one. Like, I was leaving a teaching job that was abusive. He starts talking about that in the book. We had trouble having our first child. He starts talking about that in the book. I had like paternal, the depression thing after postpartum depression. He starts going after that in the book. It was just like, dude, please stop. but kind of like even I was saying, he does it so well that like once his hooks were in me, I couldn't stop. I had to see where the train was going, even though like, no, not this book also.
It's like you want to stop, you just can't do it.
Right, exactly. The train's at full steam now. We're going.
So Rob, I did want to ask you, since you said you're not a parent, what made you want to write a parental horror type of book?
Yeah. So during COVID, we were having, you know, like, and we all kind of did it, right? Like, we did like the Zoom meetings with our friends and stuff. Like, we went to my wife's friend, got married, and we went to her like Zoom wedding. And I was like, this is the best wedding I've ever been to, because I'm sitting outside smoking a cigar in gym shorts. Like, I could not be happy.
We still need more of those. I'm all for it. Zoom, Teams, whatever you want to use.
And, you know, like my friends and I, we would get together on Zoom for like, you know, cigar smokes and, you know, drinks and stuff like that. And it was really cool. But it was also like I had this sort of feeling of like remembering being left out when they started doing their like couples nights. And I was just kind of like, oh, this kind of feels like that. But like, I know we're all like, you know, sequestered in our own, you know, domiciles and stuff like that. But I started remembering those feelings of like being excluded once they all started coupling up. And then, especially once they started having kids, feeling that like, not fear of missing out so much as just like that hurt of being excluded from events and like, oh, but we're just going out with another couple and their kids and stuff. It's like, well, oh, what am I like? All of us, we've been friends since kindergarten. Yeah. Like, I'm not good enough anymore to keep around. Like, come on, man. So that, like, I don't know, like it just kind of all cropped up. And I was like, I think I want to write about this. And then I started thinking about the idea of like, well, what would happen if a child was born and the parents just didn't love it?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like not through any like action or they're terrible people. It's just that connection's not there.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about like, well, that happens in the wild sometimes where like a lion will be like, no, not into it. See you later. And then that's it. I was like, well, what if that happens with a person? Like, how does that go from there? So like, you know, sort of that we need to talk about Kevin vibe creeped into it. And, you know, like the Rosemary's Baby vibe creeped into it because I love that 70s horror, that late 60s horror. And that's kind of where it came from. But it really came from like my own like feelings of rejection from friends about like, well, we're in a couple now, so the single guys can't come. Can't go to dinner with you. Sorry.
Oh,
and then when they had kids. What's that?
All raw. But we were that couple too. We got rid of all of our single friends.
There you go.
I'm kidding. I didn't have any friends to begin with, but that's different.
And I will say it's not even that they're necessarily bad parents. It's almost like they had a kid for the wrong reasons. They had it for because all their friends had kids. So like, let's just do it because of that.
Not trendy.
Because yeah, it's a cool thing to do because all their friends were doing it, not because they actually wanted to have a kid. I think that's where their big issue was at the beginning of that.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's like a conversation that like I've thought about. That's the, oh, Michael Alexander is here. the vile thing we created. That's really good. I'm going to steal that.
I was going to say, you're still out right now. He needs to copyright that.
But I was thinking about that too, because it's, you know, people certainly have children, you know, for terrible reasons all the time, but I wanted, if there was going to be, you know, like almost a selfish reason for them to have a child, which like I kind of feel like it's, you know, the act of creating a child can often be a selfish act in many ways, but like in their case, yes, it's a selfish act. They don't want to be excluded from their friends anymore, but they're doing it in the best way that they can. Like they're preparing themselves the best that they can. Like they're logically thinking it through. You know, I would hope that people would read it and think that, you know, okay, they're not, you know, just, oh, our marriage is failing, let's have a kid to save it. You know what I mean? Like it's different than that.
Have you got any kind of, and Brad's gonna get on me for trying to be a little negative on, I'm not going that direction.
Don't. I mean, we're here to celebrate. Don't do it.
Evie Knight likes it. Alexis, I'm just guessing you liked it. Have you got any kind of backlash saying, no, you can't write this? Being, you know, not having kids or being from a guy's perspective or anything like that yet, or is that just maybe in the future?
Way to bring it down, Jay. Goodness.
Probably.
Bracket told me anytime I go the other route. But I mean, it's an honest question, though.
That's a valid question. Yes. Yeah. I imagine that there will be some people who feel that way. And they're perfectly entitled to however they feel. I'm not here to tell everybody to love.
But I mean, for the people that you sent it out to before it got published today, nothing.
Like, no, totally. none of the early readers had anything, you know, particularly negative to say.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
In fact, like one in particular was actually very effusive in their, you know, feedback regarding the approaching an individual of color and the issues that they have having a child in our healthcare system and stuff like that, being an advocate for themselves a lot of the time. So I was really happy about that. Like that was, you know, it's a positive, it's not a negative, but that was something that really mattered to me to hear.
Take that, Brad. See? It was an honest question. Come on now.
So do you want to give people a little taste of what the book's about before you get too deep into your Prosecco and everything there?
Sure. Sure. Yeah.
Before you start slurring your words.
Oh, God. That's not far off.
And then take a few more drinks and do a little reading for us.
Sure. I'll have one little sip and then we'll kick it off.
So set it up for everybody. What are we expecting here with this little reading?
This is the prologue. I'm going to read the prologue to the book. The setup is Lola and Ian have not been, at this point, they have not been together very long. And unfortunately, Lola is having sort of a psychological reaction to having an abortion. And that's kind of where we are right now. The time before. Lola sat in a chair. There was nothing special about the chair other than that it was yellow, metal, and old. She stared and her mind raced, curious if she was older than the chair or if the chair was, in fact, older than her. She wore white, a delicate ensemble, soft pants and a slim-fitting t-shirt. "Hi, Lola," Ian said, sitting across from her, emerging as if from a fog. He was handsome, 20s, kind, pale blue eyes. "Hello, baby," she said, smiling. Her face was numb. Her entire body was numb, as though her movements and feelings were telegraphed from some deeper, darker place, and her body was following impulses issued forth eons ago. They were alone in the room. The walls were cream-colored. The bed was adorned with a green blanket, white pillow, and yellow comforter. Colors that made Lola's skin crawl. "How are they treating you in here?" Ian asked, placing his hand on her knee. "She's out of it most of the time," another voice said from behind Ian. The form took shape in the fog. Lola's father, Moses. Tall, powerful looking. He placed a hand on Ian's shoulder. "She'll be all right soon enough." "Where am I?" Lola asked, her voice airy, distant, and not altogether her own. "You're at the Apple Valley Psychiatric Center. Do you remember why you're here?" Moses asked, his voice low and measured. Lola nodded absently. Memories of a needle piercing into her, her body going numb, the humming sound of a tube being inserted into her. Walking out of the building, a woman robed in black kneeling by the highway with a sign reading, "Is this a choice or a child?" with a blurry image of a shapeless form somewhat resembling a baby on a tray, covered in blood and viscous fluid. The image made Lola's skin crawl. In her mind's eye, she swore the fetus on the tray twitched. "Visiting hours are just about over," another voice said. Ian stood, leaned down, and kissed Lola's cheek. Lola could see an orderly over Ian's shoulder, standing in the doorway. "I love you, Lola." Darkness in the room. Moonlight beyond barred windows. A cold metal chair. A poorly decorated room. Images of a bloody glob of meat twitching on a silver tray beside surgical equipment. Is this a choice or a child? Syringes filled with fluid. Injections and struggling. The taste of copper in her mouth as she broke the flesh of a young muscular orderly, her hair becoming unkempt, the smell of her own skin and sweat, shoes without laces, nights without much sleep, shadows dancing on the walls as those same walls seemed to inch in slowly, the air in the room going stale, more syringes, less fighting, giving up, a bed that felt more like a coffin, darkness, deep and lonely darkness. If Lola could, she would scream. And that's the prologue.
Nice.
Oh, thanks.
So if that doesn't get you hooked to buy the book, I don't know what's going to.
What age does this take place? What decade? What is it? Current? Is it?
Yeah, this is current. Yeah, okay. This is modern day for sure. For sure. Catherine's right about the triple Cosmo, by the way. I see that in the chat.
Where'd you go?
That's true. Just keep Steve Talks Books out of it and that'll be fine.
So this book for me was slow in a good way, like the slow insidious building up on it. But then you're throwing in, without giving too much away, these sort of cosmic elements. Was that the game plan from the very beginning to sort of go the cosmic route a little bit? Or is that something that just kind of, you know, happened naturally along the way?
I was thinking about, like, you know, the idea of creation, the creation of life. It's so cosmic. It's so strange. And it just seems such like to me, right? It's not just a biological thing. It seems like you're placing something and it forms and creates new life. Like, that is like the ultimate cosmic. It's also the ultimate body horror, but it's ultimate cosmic horror to me, too. So the cosmic stuff kind of was always there for me.
Todd's got a question for you. What defines a Long Island double versus a regular double?
Todd, you know, you have to the amount of booze. If you're putting in 2 ounces of booze, a double would then become 4 ounces of booze. I don't know how they do it in Pennsylvania, but that's a double. This happened at AuthorCon. All of these things, these references to Cosmos and doubles and whatnot, these are things at AuthorCon because they gave me a double at AuthorCon, and it wasn't a real double. It was not a traditional double.
So, well, I know you're a big Silent Hill fan, and I feel like one of the creatures or monsters, whatever you would call it, was very heavily inspired by Silent Hill.
Yeah.
Am I picking up on that the right way?
100%. Silent Hill is a big influence on everything that I do, especially this, because at the time, Konami wasn't doing anything with Silent Hill. So I was like, well, how about I kind of like vibe with my own kind of Silent Hill? And that's what the town Kirkbride's Bluff is meant to be. It's meant to be like an upstate New York Silent Hill type town with very few, if any, people living there. And it's, instead of fog, it's like, it always seems to be like misting, like a misting rain kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, Silent Hill is always super influential on everything that I do. It's like my favorite horror franchise in general. My wife is always like, "You watching a Silent Hill video on YouTube again?" And I'm like, "Yeah, yes, I am." And it's one I've watched like 10 times.
So this one sort of, and I don't know, maybe your previous stuff did as well, but this one's sort of starting to build your version of New York, your fictional New York. Yeah. And that's going to continue on. And I know your young adult book from A Weird House is going to be connected to it as well. And I'm sure other stuff is.
Yeah, yeah.
Your one before this was more a little bit on the dark fantasy, right? Okay.
Yep. So, the Triangle.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Triangle's big time cosmic horror. And I would say that they all take place in the same kind of world universe, even though the Triangle is further into the future after, you know, sea level rises decimated the planet. But yeah.
So are you enjoying sort of starting to create your own fictional universe and connecting all these dots with different stories and stuff?
Yeah. My next step is putting together an actual map and sort of creating that. I think that could be really fun. I have a sort of like a list map of like all the pertinent locations that I've spent time in with my writing. So like I mentioned in this that she's at a psychiatric facility called Apple Valley. A book that I have coming out for Weird House, a good portion of that takes, like the whole thing takes place in Apple Valley, and specifically that psychiatric center. And actually in that book, they reference something that happens in this book. So like I'm all about the connected shared universe stuff. I think it's fun.
I love that. And the Apple or the Weird House book, that's the baseball book, right?
No, the baseball book is with Cemetery Gates.
Okay.
The Weird House book is Curse of the Cobb Man.
That's right. That's right. I remember you talking about that was you and your buddies did that for like Halloween kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. We used to joke around. We tried to create our own kind of folklore about like a spirit of the harvest manifesting in the form of a giant corn cob creature. And then I was sitting there thinking about it and I was like, you know what? Like, that's not a bad idea. So I wrote that for Weird House, and it's with them right now. Now I'm working on the middle grade book that I'm writing for Weird House.
Nice. So yeah. Trevor Williamson in the chat's asking, who did the cover? Our guest, Alexis Macaluso, did the cover. Raise your hand, Alexis.
I did the cover, but I don't truly know if I am chatting correctly. I type things in. I don't know what's happening to them.
Oh, you're in the private chat. Yeah, that's just for us.
Okay. I don't know how to chat.
If you should have a button that says comments. I think you can do it there for the comments.
But she can't. She won't be able to type in it. Only you. You have control of the, the program. So, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
It's your fault. Yes. She did.
I was doing that too, Alexis.
Thank you, Trevor.
She did the cover, and the couple that's on the cover. They're her neighbors that have come missing. It's been on the news. I don't know what city she lives in, but it's been on the local news. They're missing right now. So they may have a little issue. The last known picture of them is actually on the cover.
Is the cover?
Yeah. So when they do the, you know, missing pictures like they do dogs, that's what it's going to be.
So. Yeah. With the face scratched out.
She's an artist, and this is her book. She does her own artwork.
Thank you.
Deeply personal.
A funny thing about Deeply Personal, I did not know Jeff Strand at the time to blurb Alexis's book. So I just emailed him. And then he was like, yeah, I'd love to take a look at it. Sure. And I was like, it's a fast read, I promise. And he loved it. He like wrote back so quickly and gave that blurb. And since then, like I've hung out with Jeff Strand and like got to meet him and like party and whatever. And he literally is just the sweetest guy. Like, oh my God, it's crazy. But I was so nervous messaging him because I was like, this is Jeff Strand.
Well, Robert's just name dropping. I hung out with Jeff Strand. I know Paul Kimley. I know E.B. Knight. I mean, come on.
I'm sorry. They're all cool people.
Hey, if you know him, name drop it. I totally would too. Do it.
I mean, we tell people who we've had on the show all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but no, it's, I don't know. Like, it was just really sweet of him to do it. And I just love Alexis's book so much. It's a funny little book.
It's cool.
Oh my God. I think of like one particular one all of the time, and I chuckle to myself like an idiot every single time.
Which one is it?
Julie Ryder. Like, I don't know why that one, but like, it just pops in there, and yeah, there it is, Julie. Right, like the quotation marks. Like, I don't know. Just it's like the whole thing is my kind of humor. I don't know. It's very silly. I love it.
Alexis, for Rob's book, how long did it take you to do the cover?
It was kind of a last minute project because
just slap it together last minute. We'll see what happens.
Desperate, but he was a little bit grasping for something, but
they were fit you in. That's what it was.
Yeah. But that's okay.
Yeah.
It worked out. You know, sometimes I think it's better to do things that way. You're forced to settle on something and just go for it, and you don't have time to sit around and second guess it. So
that's how I write. Like, I wait till the absolute last minute. Like, oh my God, I gotta get this done. So yeah, that's when your best work comes out, right?
Sometimes it's okay.
Frantic. Yeah.
I'm a horrible, horrible procrastinator.
Oh my God, me too. I'm so bad.
I couldn't be happier with it. I'm just over the moon with how it turned out.
How many people did you send it out to try to get blurbs? And I mean, did you have certain people you want? I know you got Paul Tremblay to do it, Evie Knight and the others on there, but I mean, were there anybody who was like, no, I just don't have time for it, or what the issue was?
There was one person, and I told Todd
again, Jay. Goodness,
I'm just curious about some of these things. I may have something coming out soon. I'm just wondering. So,
yeah, and this is kind of funny because I've mentioned this to Todd a bunch of times, and I think he might be waiting on something from this person as well currently. But everybody said yes. The only person who didn't get it to me in time was Mr. John Langan, and you know, that was
he's like your hero too.
He is. He's literally like, you know, him and Paul are like right up there. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, yeah. So Langan didn't get it to me, but I'm gonna be bothering him until he gives me one.
Well, just for the record, everybody, I knew Robert back before the show started. Before me and Brad did the show, we chatted before about movies and stuff. So
yeah,
I can give it to him. He's fine with it. Just.
Keith's like, fucking John Langan.
Yeah, so there you go. He's literally like, and all the times that I've ever talked to him, he's always cool and everything. And I'm just, I know he's busy. I get it. You know, it happens. Crazy busy. Yeah, exactly. I think that's the perfect way to put it, Tony, is like, we knew what we wanted, but not how to get there regarding the cover. That's perfect. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes like, and I have this happen a lot. Like, I know what I want in my head, and then I can't
just don't know how to express it to somebody else.
Yeah,
read my mind, please, and just do that. Just
yeah, you know, just like sort of Alexis, like, you know what I'm thinking. Like, you know what
and then with the
it's just like, just do this. I wrote it down. Just do this on the paper.
You should have drew your own like stick figures and
yeah,
I did do that. I made like my own little mock of like, this would be cool if it looked like this, and we just couldn't like. I'm not an artist. Like, I don't have an artist's mind at all, which is why I was like, Alexis. And I knew we had something like really special when I showed it to Kiesling, because he's a brilliant artist as well.
Right.
And I showed it to Kiesling.
I don't know about brilliant. Oh, wow. Let's not get him big headed. He's
no,
in the chat.
Todd, I said right. Brad's saying no, just for the record.
It's true. So I showed it to Kiesling, and he was like, oh. Like, his reaction was like, oh, that's good. That's real good. Yeah. So, and of course, Christina is a fabulous cover designer as well. She owes me a signature on something, actually. So.
Todd, no one knows who I am anyway, so it doesn't even matter. No, but I'm kidding. Todd's fantastic. I love all the stuff he does. His Devil's Creek cover that he manipulated, put together, and all the interior stuff he does with books, it's great.
Absolutely.
William, you said you had, 100 more questions for Robert you didn't get to on your show?
Yeah, William, what kind of questions you got for Robert?
Try to use our show to get across now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, no.
Just remember
I'm here to steal
the show.
Remember
how nice you're being about this, you know.
No.
Okay, so if we're going along the lines of like positive, negative feedback, one of the questions I realized I had for you after the fact, you are a teacher and a writer, as I know a bunch of people in the horror community are. They kind of pull double duty with those two. Do your students know you write? Have they given you any sort of like feedback or kickback? Are there any stories we can tell here?
Yeah, hey, let's just let William take over the show. We'll just sit back and let him handle it from now on, right?
William
was a real fan of the show. He would remember in season one, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, wow. Shooting from the hip.
Go ahead.
I've had students bring in copies of my books and, you know, they want me to sign them and stuff. And it's always like really, really sweet, but I do it on the sly. Not all of my students know that I write. The other day I was with some of my, cause I teach English as a new language to adults. And I had the Goodreads up on my smart board for the file thing. Cause I was like, are there any new reviews? I just want to say, And one of them was like, that's your book. And I was like, yeah, it comes out in a few days. And they were like, that's really cool, teacher. And I was like, thanks. Yeah. But that was the most recent thing. It was very cute. Some of my coworkers know. Some of my coworkers are going to be coming to a reading and signing that I'm doing. So I'm nervous about that. But yeah.
So do you put like your own books in your bookshelf in your classroom, just kind of slip them in between Shakespeare and Faulkner and everybody?
No. For sure not. I probably could, though. My boss is supportive. She actually sent out an email talking about how, you know, I have a new book and the book signing and stuff. So that was really cool of her.
That's cool.
She's a good boss.
I could just kind of imagine you being in class going, just curious of people here, how would you feel if you were reading a story and it went in this direction and you know, trying to get direction from them without telling them what's going on with it?
Oh, God.
Give them bonus points. Like, you get extra credit if you do a book report on my book.
Find my plot hole.
Yeah. I've used one short story that I wrote in the classroom, just as like, because I did different stations one day with like different groups of kids reading different short pieces of fiction and just like analyzing it with like one question kind of thing. And I was like, I need one more. So I took one from my first collection and gave them that.
For a good grade, they'll give you a good review.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Go for it.
I should weaponize them and have them review everything.
Right.
That would be nice.
Did you let them know that was your short story, or was it just kind of anonymous?
Yeah, it was anonymous. I took my name off it.
Yeah. So like the that's good. You didn't have to fail everybody because they didn't like it.
The only way you're going to pass this semester, you tell here's me the link before. To Goodreads.
yeah, right.
Five stars.
Hit that five stars.
I wrote the review for you. Just put it in
just copy and paste. Do that. What's it? Chat GPT. Just fake reviews, and they can just paste those on Goodreads.
Oh God! Oh, you just gave somebody an idea.
It's like that AI bot that will write papers for you or books for you or whatever. Oh. So just have it write reviews for you.
Oh my God, that's a terrible idea, but I also love it.
Just create.
I'm like 7 or 12 or 15 books behind. So.
Start fake
possibility.
AI reviews the books.
Yeah.
But what's the Todd's in the chat. Rob, what's the reception for the book been today? Today's release day. People have been talking about it all day. What's the reception been for it all day long?
Seems positive. You know, people are very sweet to message, and you know, some people have messaged me about, you know, like wanting signed copies and stuff. So that was really cool. So yeah, like I literally have my author copies downstairs, and my wife, because she has far superior handwriting to me, has addressed all of the you know, envelopes and stuff. We did Evie's before, for example. Nice. And yeah, so we're going to be sending those out, and we were trying to, because like I want to have something cool to write in a book, because like I've never had anything cool to write in a book before. Like Tremblay wrote in the Pallbearers Club, he wrote Welcome to the Club. And that's really cool. Like, that's a cool one. And like Chapman Clay wrote Want to Get Haunted in Ghost Eaters and stuff. It's like, oh, that's so good. And it's like, I've never had anything cool like that. So like, we're trying to figure out something cool to write. And I think we have something.
It's gotta be something with Vile in it. Something with Vile in it for sure.
Yeah, something like that. We'll see. But so I'm trying to figure out what exactly to write in the book. I literally just stole, like, for my first book, I just stole Stay Scared, which was what George Romero used to write. And I was like, well, he's dead, so I can so that's what I did with the first book. But now I gotta come up with something clever.
So can people reach out to you directly to buy signed copies of the Vile thing we created?
Sure. Yeah, they could do that.
Do whatever. If they want to.
What do we have? Yeah. You have your Twitter, you probably have a MySpace, right? Your
Twitter, MySpace. Instagram. Can we bring MySpace back? Can that be like the new place for authors? Wouldn't that be fun?
That's a horror book in itself, but
that would be really cool.
Yeah. Your wife behold says, behold my creation.
Oh, babe, that's real good, actually.
If MySpace made a comeback, what would your homepage music be?
Ooh, oh, that's good a question. Good question. I would say I would maybe go with the song from Us, that like this the version of I Got Five on It, the spooky one.
Oh yeah, that's cool.
You know what it was originally? I'll tell you, it was Extreme Ways by Moby, because I was really into the Bourne Identity.
I don't even remember. It was so long ago. I don't remember what my song was. It's probably some rap song, I'm sure.
Nice. What would you say, William? This is the final thing I created. Best Robo. I might use that. That's pretty good.
You got to put smiley face too. Smiley face.
Oh, of course. You know what it is? Like, I wish I was a better artist because I would draw like something really cute and fun in it. Yeah. Like Langan's a pretty good artist, like with autographing his stuff. And it's like, oh, that would be so cool to have that. But.
Ronald Kelly's right.
Yeah, Ronald Kelly. He draws a comic book for you right inside for you. Just a total comic.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Just do your stick figures like you did for when you're trying to figure out the cover.
Just do
that. They're held this little shadowy, squealy blob. Yeah. Do that.
I should just send everything to Alexis and have
her. I was going
to
say, you have Alexis right here. She can just make a scan.
My handwriting is absolutely horrible. I can guarantee yours is better than mine. Yeah. I do want to say to the person that wrote about The Adventures of Pete and Pete that I still listen to that song sometimes. It's a great song.
Nice. That's a good
Jay, did you have MySpace or were you too old to even
have that? I don't remember. I don't think I did. I don't remember last time I used Facebook either.
You were like 75 when Facebook
was. No, I'm too old. I was too old for it. Nice. I am.
Stop it.
I want to say one of the radio stations I worked at early on when I was working in radio had it for like maybe close to a year, and I was supposed to like help keep it up, but I never did. It was just dumb.
Yeah, it's not easy having to like run the social media and do your normal job or whatever at the same time. Like that's like a multiple person gig.
Yeah.
Right.
I think I was in medical school and I just didn't do anything. I had a girl doing my hair one time who I said, you know, oh, I went to medical school, and she was asking me like, oh, how long, you know, does it take? And I told her, and she said, oh my God, that's so sad. You wasted your whole 20s. And I was like, you know what? Yeah. So yes, I wasted my 20s. I did not get on MySpace. I went to medical school. So.
Then you can take that money stack and be like, who cares about my 20s now?
It's like, there goes your tip. But like, I wasted my 20s. So I did. Maybe it was going on then. I don't know. I was out of it.
Well, what was after MySpace? Facebook was after MySpace?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like, Facebook originally was only for college students. You had to like sign with your college ID to get on there.
Yep. The Facebook.
Like my Facebook is the account that they warn you about. It's like if they have less than 30 friends or whatever, I have like five. Yeah, I have like five. It's like I got it just for like to cover to the bands I like and the sports teams I like. I didn't request friends, or I was like, I don't care what you guys are doing every day. You know, I never got it. So
Live journal forever. Hell yeah. I want to thank my publisher for coming. Thank you, Tony, for coming.
Yes. Thanks, Tony. Thanks so much. And Rob, by the way, I mean, Brad and I want to thank you for, you know, wanting us to help launch Friendster. This book for you.
Oh no, guys!
Not to be all sentimental and mushy. You know how we are. But no,
we always get mushy at the end.
We do. It is always an honor. I mean, it's one thing for us to sit here and interview someone, but when someone reaches out and they trust us to do a good show to launch a book, it's something a little bit different. So yeah, we appreciate the fact that you wanted us to get together and chat about this book tonight, and hopefully people are watching this and they'll give it a shot, give it a buy sometime soon here for you. So.
Yeah, well, I can't thank you guys enough, and I can't thank Alexis, Evie, and William for agreeing to be here. Evie is a doctor, for God's sakes, and she's here, so it's incredible.
I slept all day.
Everyone else is a peasant, and Evie's the doctor.
No.
But I can't thank you guys enough, and thank you guys for being here to support me, and Alexis, the beautiful cover, Evie, the amazing blurb, and all of the help that you gave me, and William, your enthusiasm and kindness. I can't thank you guys enough. And Brad and Jay, really means a lot. Like, you guys are great. Like, I can't thank you enough.
Well, we really appreciate you picking us, because I mean, there are a lot of other shows out there, but we're going to pat ourselves on the back for that.
Not to me, baby.
Well, there you go. Go celebrate. The name of the book is The Vile Thing Recreated. Today,
hold it up. Hold it up for Ray Ray Rob.
I will. Yes. There it is. Que bonita, see?
Robert P. Otone. P stands for purchase my freaking book already.
So Evie and William and Alexis, do y'all have any parting words about the book itself? Why people should go pick it up? Put you on the spot.
I'll probably put him on the spot.
He wants to start.
It is unputdownable. It is a great book. And don't, the page number, what's the word?
Intimidated by the
four. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. I can't think of words.
She's not a Bram Stoker award winner.
She's the award winner.
Right. Don't be intimidated. It is a great, it's really good. It's just chef's kiss.
Nice.
Thank you.
William, you can't get a better endorsement than that right there. So,
It's big because it deserves to be big.
Yeah.
It's got human horror elements that are just nailed down perfectly. It's got cosmic horror elements that help break up the human elements the second you think you might be getting tired of them. It's just so well plotted, so well paced, so well written. Like, Robert, it destroyed this thing, mm-hmm. or created this thing,
yes.
whichever way that's supposed to go.
He created it, and then he destroyed it once it was over.
Thank you.
Alexis, do you have any parting words to bestow up on Robert, or you can just talk trash on him? Either way,
I think Robert is a great guy. He is a good friend. He is very generous, and he's always all about sharing and supporting other artists. So mm-hmm. What more can you ask for?
That's right. Also, check out Spooky House Press, Rob's press. Mm-hmm. He's got a bunch of good books over there. More coming in the future. I know Rob's got a lot of stuff lined up.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have a new book coming May 16th. Going to be sending out the e-arcs to everybody ahead of that, in a week or two. I'm very excited for that. It's called The Disappearance of Tom Nero. It's by TJ Price. Very excited. Certain somebody in here did the fabulous formatting and illustration, one Alexis Macaluso. And it looks incredible. It's sort of our House of Leaves, our attempt at trying a House of Leavesy type.
I remember you talking about this before. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of trying to, see? Ms. Broadbent.
Can I plug? Yes, you can absolutely plug it.
She has a physical copy. We have very few physical copies that we were able to send out. So right. She has.
And I didn't get one. God, Rob, I thought we were friends, man.
I didn't see our names in the acknowledgments of this new one here.
My goodness.
Dedicated to Brad and Jay. No, I'm just
that's how we're going to end the show. Rob, final words.
I guess, thank you everybody for coming and watching. And again, thank you to Evie, Alexis, and William. And thank you, Jay and Brad, and everybody who came and watched and commented and everything. And It just means a lot, and I hope everybody checks it out. I know it's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but I appreciate you taking a sip.
Nice. Taking a sip.
That's good.
All right. Everyone in the chat, thanks for stopping by as always. Thanks for commenting and interacting with us. We totally appreciate it. If it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be doing this. So thanks so much. And for our panel here, Evie Knight, William Sterling, Alexis I never say your last name right.
Macaluso.
I'm so sorry.
I fumble the ending, Jay. Good Lord.
Really? I mean, I'm not a professional. It's not on my resume. So, Rob, congratulations on the book. And hopefully some eyes get on this video and we'll get some sales there for you. So other than that, Brad, that's a wrap. That's the way the cookie crumbles.
That's the way the cookie crumbles. Appreciate everyone coming to hang out. Everybody. Celebrating Rob's book. Definitely go pick it up. It's a very great, slow, insidious
Thanks, burn. Todd. Appreciate it. Yeah.
And I think Jay just fumbled it. Just gave it up right on the 1 yard line.
I knew I was going to mess up the last name. Just, everyone
that's
else.
That's why you saved her name for last, right? And then you, God. All right.
Thank you again.
Everyone pick up Rob's book. It's fantastic. Love you, Jay.
See, I know you.